This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If I were a betting man, I would put my money on the fact that Governor Pat McCrory probably went to bed on Tuesday night in the governor's mansion with a big smile on his face. Maybe he was in Charlotte, I don't know. But by midnight, it had become clear that fellow Republicans had swept to victory in races across the country and taken control of the U.S. Senate. Further, one of the new Republican senators is going to be Speaker of the North Carolina House, Tom Tillis. North Carolina seems to have shifted from purple to red, despite the frustration expressed at the statehouse and at the governor's mansion by Moral Monday protesters and others over the summer. But that's history. Now, it's on to new work, and the governor has a to-do list filled with items we'll ask about this hour. Governor Pat McCrory joins us again in our Spirit Square studio, and we want you to join us as well on Facebook, Twitter. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org, and you can join us by phone at 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. Governor McCrory, welcome back.
It's great to be back. I just came from a wonderful Freedom's Breakfast at the old Adams Mark Hotel, still called Adams Mark, sponsored by Quincy Collins, American Airlines, and it was just very moving. A person from who was a hostage during the hostage crisis was recognized, and the daughter of one of the other hostages was recognized. Just bringing back history, and then some Vietnam veterans at Geringer High School who built a memorial in memory of I think 15 people who were graduates of Geringer High School died in Vietnam. And it was just a very, very moving thing. And I want to thank Quincy Collins, a former prisoner of war in Vietnam, for continuing this, I think, 20 years now of this breakfast. It was just – I always come back for it as mayor, now as governor. It's quite an honor.
Well, thank you for skipping out of that and coming over here this morning. I appreciate that. Election night, the polls – were not accurate this year because they did not predict the extent of the Republican success that we experienced on Tuesday night. Did any of this surprise you? Did the Tillis victory surprise you?
No. The polls have not been accurate for a long time. I read these polls constantly, and they're given to me and they're publicized, but the polls weren't accurate when I ran for governor, where I think when we won by 11 or 12 points, and the polls were not even close to that when I ran for governor in 12, and they were inaccurate also against me in 08 also. They were predicting a little tighter race, but the polls are getting more and more difficult to tell what the voter swings are and who's voting.
Is that because we're lying to the pollsters or because they can't reach us because we're all on do not call lists?
I think a lot of it's they can't reach them, and some of their input on they're not always polling the people who actually vote. Hmm. And when you read these polls in the newspaper, the ones you should be most worried about are the ones who actually do vote.
And 2/3 of the electorate did not vote. So when you look at what happened nationally and when you look at what happened in North Carolina, do you see this as a repudiation of Barack Obama and his policies, or do you see this particularly in North Carolina as a slap on the back, a pat on the back, so to speak, for what the legislature and you have been doing in Raleigh?
Well, let me first say that the voter turnout was still very strong for an off-year election. In fact, the kind of quiet our critics for the past year who have been criticizing our new voter laws in the Charlotte Observer, including many editorials and the New York Times and MSNBC, who were saying our new voting laws were going to discourage voting. In fact, early voting increased even among minority voters and in North Carolina. And our voting laws, I think our new voting laws added extra hours at the time people wanted to vote, and we didn't have the problem with lines that we typically had. So want to say that.
But in truth, that record-setting midterm, and we did have a record-setting midterm election, I suppose, 2.9 million, but that's far less than the 4.5 we had in the 2012 presidential
election. Well, that's always the case in off-year elections. But in comparison to off-year elections, the new voting laws had no impact on the turnout. In fact, it may have even helped the turnout. So dire predictions were dead wrong about the new voting laws that we've put into place.
But do you see this as a repudiation of Barack Obama, or do you, in North Carolina, do you see this as an affirmation that what has been happening in Raleigh is on the right track?
I think it's a combination of both, but it's still a very divided nation. It's a very divided state. I don't think it's time for we as Republicans to spike the ball in the end zone.
Because you said it wasn't a mandate.
I said it's not time for us to spike the ball in the end zone. I think I think we'd be make a mistake.
Actually, on Tuesday night, you said, and I quote, it wasn't a mandate.
And I also said, it's not time to spike the ball. I think there is a strong message, but I don't think it's time for us to all of a sudden get arrogant with power. I think that may have been a problem with President Obama. When he won in 08, he assumed it was a major mandate when, in fact, our elections are all still very close at the state level and at the national level. And we've got to recognize the division and continue to have dialogue. And, you know, instead of spiking the ball in the end zone, I think we as Republicans ought to, first of all, act as though we've been in the end zone before and realize we've got a lot of hard work to do and we've got to work together and we've got to listen to the public and we've got to understand our differences and try to find viable solutions to very complex problems. I do think, however, that what you often read during the past year of harsh criticism and some of the negative TV ads were wrong. And I think the majority of voters saw through that regarding commercials that you saw that we cut education, which was totally untrue, issues that we were hurting the environment, which were totally untrue. And in fact, what's even more ironic about this past election, I had groups spend $1 million against me during the past 4 weeks in primarily the Greensboro and Raleigh markets, $1 million of ads against Governor Pat McCrory, and I wasn't even on the ballot. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea who paid for these ads. It was some environmental groups, but I would have preferred that money being spent on cleaning up the environment instead of negative TV ads and misleading TV ads.
So you're telling me that kind of advertising bothers you as a person, as a voter, as a politician?
Always has had.
Are you alone in that, or do other politicians, office holders?
I think all office holders dislike them. In fact, I have a history of running almost all positive campaigns out of the governor.
Why don't politicians do something about it?
Because they work. And you saw both the Hagan camp and the Tillis camp. They had to respond to negative ads, and a lot of the negative ads are also from outside groups. By the way, the negative ads directed against me during the last 4 weeks were groups that I have no idea who they were out of D.C., listed under a quote, an environmental group, which says, I have coal ash on my hands, and it was basically blaming me for the coal ash spill.
When you run again in 2 years, will you refrain from any negative ads?
I don't think I ran one negative ad in 2008 or 2012.
Okay.
So I run extremely positive ads, and I talk about my record and talk about my vision and talk about what I want to do for the future of North Carolina. I did that as mayor, by the way. You know, I've had pretty good success of running pretty positive ads, and I'm going to continue to try to do that. The dilemma is when the other side attacks you. I know in 08 I had, good gosh, some negative ads directed toward me, and it was amazing to see these negative ads directed toward me when I wasn't even on the ballot this year. It was quite amazing.
Of course, the president.
I had to wash my hands an awful lot with all these ads.
Well, the president wasn't on the ballot this year either, but he.
I think the president is always on the ballot, and now we're finding out at times the governor was on the ballot. There's no doubt that they tried to make me an issue in this campaign. But I do think nationally, because I helped campaign for other governors throughout the nation. I went up to Maine and campaigned for Governor LePage up there. And I do think a lot of this is directed toward the leadership out of D.C. And a lot of governors were reelected where people were pretty content with the governors. I think only one major governor in my party lost, and that was Pennsylvania, and then we gained a lot of other seats.
You mentioned the critical ad that was criticizing environmental issues with regard to you. Kent in Huntersville is joining us now by phone, and I believe he has a question about environmental oversight. Kent, welcome. Sure. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call. And Pat McCoy, I think you did a great job for us here in Charlotte. So
thank you.
I hope you continue that work as our governor. My question is, with the legislature going to almost all Republican and Tom Tillis talking about deregulating and somewhat crushing the EPA, and us having being on the verge of bringing fracking into our state, I want to know what you're going to do as our governor to make sure that we don't have another disaster like the coal ash and make sure that our aquifers don't get contaminated with lack of regulation into our with fracking.
Okay. Well, first of all, I am going to push for a gas exploration in North Carolina. Since we get natural gas here piped to North Carolina from other states, I think it's hypocritical of us to go, well, we're willing to use gas coming from other states, but we're not willing to look at our own natural gas capability here in North Carolina. I think it's total hypocrisy.
Even at the danger of endangering our own environment, because fracking is problematic.
No, actually, it's much. In fact, I'm working with the Interior Department, the Energy Department right now, and I am not going to risk our environment and our quality of life. I'm going to make sure we instill safe. Why would I want to do that? Because I live here too, and that's ridiculous. But at the same time, we're taking natural gas. You may be heating your house tonight, Mike, from natural gas from fracking piped in from other areas of the nation, including Pennsylvania, including West Virginia, including Ohio, which is being piped in right now. Mm. So we aren't seeing the disasters that everyone has predicted in those areas. In fact, just the opposite. And we've got to make sure that we have safe, sound environmental regulations.
And there have been instances where water quality has been damaged and earthquakes have happened because of fracking.
No.
Yes.
No.
We've done shows on it, Governor.
I've seen the movies by Matt Damon saying that, but I don't think Hollywood has clearly explained that.
I'm not talking
well
about Hollywood. I'm talking about people in the energy industry who sat at this table with us.
We have now there are good regulations in place which allow for good, sound, clean environmental ways, and we have to make sure those regulations stay in place and are implemented right here in North Carolina. But the first thing we have to do is find out, do we even have it? And all I'm doing right now as governor is to find out, do we have natural gas primarily in the Sand Hills areas to help create jobs and also help with our energy independence?
Well, you have an energy plan that you say harnesses all of the state's energy potential, including wind and solar, testing for fracking, offshore energy exploration. You say the impact could be huge, 116,000 jobs, $56 billion with a B, dollars in cumulative spending, and $9.5 billion from revenue sharing. Is all that money and those jobs, are they worth the risk to the environment?
I'm not going to risk
particularly if you're going offshore.
We are, again, you're pumping gas right now today when you fill up your car from offshore oil in the Gulf of Mexico, Mike.
And we saw what happened there.
Right. Well, if you want to stop all offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico right now, then stop filling up your gas tank because you're taking it right now. You got here by car, right? Right.
Oh, yeah, because you won't extend the blue line to my house, yeah.
I'm trying. Hey, I'm an advocate of mass transit. I'm an advocate of all the above. I'm working with the Obama administration, and Secretary Jewell from the Obama administration has given us permission, including the governor of Virginia, Democratic governor, the governor of South Carolina, and myself. I lead that coalition. Terry McCulloch in Virginia is very supportive. By the way, a right-hand guy with President Clinton. And he's now the governor, and we've got a great relationship. He and I have been working with Secretary Jewell of the Obama administration, and they have allowed us to begin seismic testing to find out what we have off the coast of North Carolina. In fact, I had a meeting yesterday with some of the administrators there, and that's what we talked about. What is the safe and environmentally sound way to first do seismic testing to find out what we have, and then if there is a cache of oil or gas, to make sure we do it in an environmentally sound and effective way.
Are you also looking? I'll have 20 seconds. Are you also looking into wind power off the
coast?
Because we are in the perfect place in the world for that.
Yeah, I've got some people who don't want wind off the coast. I've got NIMBYs who don't want wind too. Yeah. So any form of power we have some people against it.
More of your questions for Governor Pat McCrory when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia. November delivers the new Subaru 2015 Legacy with Subaru EyeSight, driver assist technology, monitors traffic, and reacts to avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. And Northeastern University Charlotte inviting applicants to take part in a graduate school application workshop and meet with admissions staff Saturday, November 15th. Details at 980-224-8468. 1968. On Monday on this program, a conversation with two artists involved in an exhibit at the Harvey B. Gantt Center, A Love Supreme, features portraits of African-American icons, including Muhammad Ali, Lena Horne, John Coltrane, Diana Ross, Michael Jackson, the list goes on and on, all at the heights of their careers. And then we talk to Dr. James Tabor, UNC Charlotte religion professor. He sheds more light on the Apostle Paul, whose philosophy, he says, plays a role in almost everything we think about everything.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, the GOP lays out its priorities for a new Congress. President Obama meets with leaders from both parties about future cooperation. And what's behind the four-year low in gas prices?
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFH.
Are you going to invite me to the play this year?
What, the Charlotte Squawk?
Yeah, you didn't invite me last year for the first time. And
that's because you're too big to get to.
Are you too bitter now that I got the award for best actor?
Enough. Enough.
You're bitter.
Enough with that. Mr. Governor, sir. let's get back to energy production and fracking and things
right.
like that. The price of oil is dropping, and mm-hmm. I was talking to a person who's high up in the financial industry a couple of days ago off the air, and he says the price of oil is going to continue to drop as we go forward here because, in part, of adoption of alternative energy sources, and it's happened, and more mileage from cars and things like that. So is it worth endangering the environment? Because you do put the environment in danger when you drill offshore. You do put it in danger when you frack. Is it worth putting it in danger if the return on investment is not going to be as high as it was, if the price of oil today is more,
one of the
is
reasons
more than it will be tomorrow?
One of the major reasons the price of energy and oil is down today is because America's become more independent.
We are independent.
No, more independent.
No, we are.
We are still dependent upon Venezuela. We are still dependent upon Nigeria. We are still dependent upon Saudi Arabia. We are still dependent upon Russia. But we are not as dependent as we used to be, primarily because of the natural gas explosion here in North Carolina and the nation. And in fact, just recently, we've got a new pipeline that's being announced for the eastern part of the state, which is going to have a huge impact on energy prices and the price of electricity for the eastern part of the state, which is going to help me recruit new jobs to areas where we still have a high unemployment. And that's going to be a huge opportunity for construction jobs and also jobs created by lower energy prices, especially in the east where they have again, higher utility prices than here in the Piedmont.
So Matt has emailed us, why won't North Carolina frackers have to disclose the composition of chemicals pumped to produce gas to avoid serious water concerns?
They will have to disclose it to our environmental agency.
Even the proprietary ingredients?
To our environmental agency, but there, I believe I understand the law to be passed where there's a proprietary confidential issue there and to our public safety issues.
Can we trust Diener?
Yes, you can.
Why?
Because I've got leadership that has done their job. And
well, they kind of turned their head on coal ash.
They did
years.
Not turn their head on coal ash since I've come into office. In fact, just the opposite. We're the first administration, despite what you see in the commercials and from liberal activists who started enforcing coal ash laws for the first time and actually took lawsuits against Duke Energy, my former employer. We were the first administration to ever do that. Didn't happen during the Hunt administration, during the Martin administration, during the Easley administration, or during the Purdue administration. And this has been a 60-year-old problem. And it was the McCrory administration before the coal ash spill, which started through my Diener department, John Scavarla, who started recognizing we've got a potential problem. And the coal ash spill in Danville area, or right below the border in Edenton area, or Eden area, it could have been much worse. And most people don't realize we didn't have any fish kills. We didn't stop a water system primarily in Danville. It kept going. But it could have been much worse had that pipe broken in a different place. And we're very fortunate, and that's why we're reversing legislation that was passed by my predecessor and by Democratic legislature, which grandfathered old dams. You didn't see that in the commercials either. It was actually weakened by the other party in the 2009 time period, and we're now reestablishing those, reversing some of those laws and doing strong enforcement.
Debbie emails, would you be all right with the Utilities Commission approving a Duke Energy rate increase request to pay for coal ash cleanup costs?
Well, I Duke has already committed with our strong encouragement that we should not pay for the coal ash recovery or cost of the Dan River. I think the big controversy or the big issue for the Utilities Commission to decide is what about the moving of existing coal ash at other sites. And as governor, I've got to respect the Utility Commission setup. It is their responsibility, and I think it's improper for us to bring politics into their quasi-judicial review.
Frank in Charlotte writes, people's well water has been contaminated with dangerous toxins near the Buck coal ash pits. Many residents there have serious health issues. Shouldn't Duke be required to move the ash at that site?
Well, some of that data is being disputed at this point in time. We're still reviewing those accusations that are made near Buck and several other plants. And if there is any contamination, will demand the immediate cleanup of those wells.
I want to move away from energy, but not before we talk to Wiley in Gastonia, who has a fracking question. Wiley, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Thank you so much for having me. I actually just spent the past 5 years living in West Virginia, and specifically the northern panhandle of West Virginia, where these frack pads are just springing up like mushrooms. And I think pipe fracking in terms of economic development and job growth is a complete pipe dream. You know, most of the folks who are doing it are coming in from Oklahoma and Texas and Ontario. And I've recently moved back to North Carolina. I'm a North Carolina native. I actually live in Wilmington. And I like to joke that I left West Virginia to move to a more conservative state. And I know that, Mr. Governor, you kind of rode a moderate wave into office. And I wonder how comfortable you are in your most honest moments with this really conservative course the state is taking, because that's not really your history as a moderate Republican. So this conservative wave, I wonder how comfortable you are leading.
Well, first of all, both in my 08 campaign and my 12 campaign, I said I would very strongly push for gas exploration, both offshore and inland. So I said that when I ran for office, and the voters elected me knowing full well that I was going to push for that. And I might add, coming from West Virginia, we just announced a major pipeline coming from West Virginia to eastern North Carolina by Dominion, by Duke, by Piedmont Natural Gas, which is really going to help create new jobs in the eastern part of the state. And I'd encourage you to go to the eastern part of the state and say, no, we don't want you to have that pipeline coming in from West Virginia, despite it having the opportunity to create jobs and lower utility rates. I'm going to encourage that pipeline coming in from West Virginia to the eastern part of the state, where the unemployment is unacceptable and where we now have the opportunity to recruit new employers and industry to deal with the major unemployment in the eastern part of the state of North Carolina. And I'm thankful that West Virginia is doing that. And I think North Carolina ought to play its part in the same role and not just depend upon other states to bring us the energy that all of the people listening are using as we speak.
But what about his comment about you being a moderate Republican mayor for a very long time in Charlotte, mm-hmm. and a very progressive one, too? A lot of things that have gotten done in the city during your time in office were things that more conservative Republicans were opposed to, and the Lynx Blue Line was one of them.
And I'm still pushing as governor.
So
let me just say this. As governor, I'm helping fund the extension of the line to UNC Charlotte. I'm pushing for the line toward Huntersville. Since I've been governor, you've noticed the road formula has changed, in which the good old boy system of my predecessor Democrats, they built roads based upon politics. I'm now building roads based upon where the cars are, where the safety needs are, and where the economic development needs are. I've taken politics out of the good old boy system of North Carolina road building, and I think Charlotte benefits because
of
that.
I want to come right back to that, because that is a very important point.
That includes mass transit.
Okay, but what about this situation where you are or have been a moderate Republican, and when you were elected to office, the legislature went more conservative. They're much more conservative. I mean, you've butted head many times with Phil Berger, and if you believe believe the news reports, there were times when the two of you weren't speaking to each other because you're not considered to be a conservative Republican by the legislature, not conservative enough.
Yeah, I am a conservative, but there are people that are more conservative than me mm-hmm. in the legislature representing their districts of North Carolina.
So how difficult does that make your job, or how plausible does it make your vision for the state to take place if you're butting heads with a much more conservative legislature?
I had the same problem when I was mayor. Remember, I had on the left, I had Ella Scarborough, and on the right, I had Don Reed. And it's very similar dynamics during my 14 years as mayor as I'm seeing as governor. Very similar dynamics. There are times when the left goes way too far to the left, and I thought some of the protesters in their, you know, going against, you know, the more liberal media says voter ID bills are conservative. I don't think that's conservative. I think it's common sense. So I think a lot of it is what do you apply as what is conservative, what is liberal. And I've been very upfront. I will disagree with my right when I disagree with them, and I publicly do that. And I'll disagree with the left when I and I'll do that publicly, and I did that as mayor, and I'm doing it as governor.
Well, not only is there some disagreement between you and the more conservative elements of the mm-hmm. legislature, but Jason wants to know, because the election revealed how closely split North Carolina is between Republicans and Democrats, he would like you to list three specific examples of where the McCrory administration has reached across the aisle in an effort to legitimately legislate on behalf of North Carolina's Democratic, with a big D, citizens.
Well, in changing my transportation formula, which was one of the biggest pieces of legislation that you didn't read much about in the front page here in Charlotte, but we changed the whole formula of how we distribute road money in North Carolina, and that was approved by 90% of the legislature, rural and urban, Republican and Democrat. And I couldn't have done it without the Democrats, and I reached across the line. And that was probably the major piece of legislation during my term as governor at this point in time.
So we do have this history, as you mentioned, of money for roads going to places that don't have people, at least not as many people as the urban areas.
You know, one thing I noticed when I was mayor and I noticed when I was governor, you know, we'd drive to the beach from Charlotte, and the roads would go from 2 lanes to 8 lanes, yes. Back to 2 lanes, back to 8 lanes. And wherever it was 8 lanes, it was named after a politician or a former Department of Transportation board member. And I promised as governor that I was going to end that. And so we've done just that.
And you have this 25-year transportation plan. Mm-hmm. But some have criticized you for going against the tenets of your own plan by proposing to borrow $1 billion for new highway construction to spur economic development in rural areas. As part of this, I'm told you'll be widening a portion of I-85 in Rowan County. Now, all due respect to Rowan County, but why would a project like that get the green light when we have to build toll lanes on I-77 through Charlotte?
Because we have a choke point in Rowan County where because it was
wide. And this isn't a choke point?
Yeah, well,
Charlotte?
Well, let me finish my answer. First of all, there are no politics involved in that. We are still looking at economic development, congestion, and safety. The other thing, we've got projects right now that have been sitting on the sidelines for 10 to 15 years that we want to unleash some of the choke points where it went from 8 lanes to 2 lanes to 8 lanes to 4 lanes and so forth. And one of those choke points is right beyond Rowan County where it was in Salisbury, it's 8 lanes, and then it goes right back down as you right before you get into Cabarrus County to a mile or two choke point right there. And we're going to relieve that because it's permit ready. And that's the other criteria.
Is it going to be a toll road?
No.
Okay.
Will not be.
So
we have toll roads right now in Raleigh, and we're going to have a toll lane in Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
Why?
So we can speed up the project and get it built based upon the amount of money that we have available.
Wouldn't it have been better for the state to build it as a toll lane and collect the tolls themselves, as opposed to giving it to an outboard company for 50 years?
My administration and the previous administration realized that we do not have the expertise or the wherewithal to do that, and we're doing what other states have done.
To do what? To run a toll lane?
To run and build and finance. We still would have to finance it in a special way, and the experts have told me, and we're gonna try it out, as we have done in other areas and other states have done that, and we're gonna experiment with a toll lane, what used to be called a hot lane, high occupancy lane, which would be tolled.
Well, Kyle in Charlotte writes, if 90% of the population in Charlotte does not want HOT lanes, is it good representation to push them upon working families? And by that, I believe he means toll lanes. Is it a good representation to push them upon working families and those who have to commute to their jobs each day in North Carolina anyway?
Well, hopefully that toll lane will free up congestion in the other free lanes, three or four free lanes that we'll have along that corridor. But if we don't right now, I do not have the amount of money that would take even the billion-dollar bond referendum, which we're going to distribute throughout many metropolitan and rural areas, would not even fund that one
but
project.
We're building roads. We've been building roads throughout the state for most of the 20th century and before that. And you're widening the choke point in Rowan County. We know how to do that. We know how to finance it. We know how to run it. We know how to repave it when the time comes. Why don't we know how to build toll lanes if they are, in fact, necessary on I-77 from Charlotte to
Davidson? Well, we do know how to do toll lanes. It's a matter of the financing of it. And I'll be glad to have Tony Tatum, my Secretary of Transportation, come in and explain that. But we are exploring every option right now. And the fact of the matter is we do not have enough money in the long term to meet all of our road demands.
Why not?
Because part of the situation is the gas revenue is going down. Mm-hmm. At the same time, car efficiency is going up, and the primary source of income to pay for our maintenance and operations and new construction is the gas tax.
Is this going to help your push toward more mass transportation? Because the argument against mass transportation, part of it has been we're subsidizing mass transportation.
All roads are subsidized. Right now, every form of transportation is subsidized. I used to say that to my conservative brethren here in Charlotte when I was mayor. All forms of transportation are subsidized.
Brad on Twitter, we're going to shift gears here. GOP tax and regulatory reforms are improving our economy and our way of life. What is next for what you call our Carolina comeback? Where are we coming back from, by the way?
We're coming back from when I came into office, we had the fifth highest unemployment rate in the country. We owed the federal government $2.6 billion for unemployment compensation that we borrowed from the federal government. We also had a misforecast of $530 million in Medicaid spending. That's what I came into my first week in office. And we've come back. We're coming back. We're no longer the fifth highest unemployment rate in the country. We're not even in the top 30 in unemployment. And you see the incredible Charlotte's help leading the way, and I'm proud of that. And Sharon Decker and myself are recruiting heavily, not only for Charlotte new businesses, but for the rest of the state.
How much of that is due to efforts on your part, the legislature's part, local efforts on the parts of the chambers of commerce and things like that, and how much of it is due to Obama's economic policies?
I think, well, most of it's due to the private sector, but I think we have contributed. I think the local leaders have contributed, the state leaders have contributed, and the federal leaders have contributed.
So what's next, to answer his question on the Carolina comeback?
I think, first of all, we just revamped the whole Commerce Department, which hopefully is going to make it easier to recruit. We've got some incredible opportunities for new businesses to come, not only this area but other parts of the state. I mean, I spend a huge amount of my time recruiting businesses, just like I did as mayor. You don't see it, but myself and Sharon Decker are spending an incredible amount of time recruiting businesses. Our tax reform, we think, is having a very positive impact, in which, especially in our competition against South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia, because even living here in Charlotte, a lot of people would move their business right across the border to avoid the highest corporate tax and income tax in the Southeast. And we're not seeing as much movement across the border, and we're becoming much more competitive against Tennessee and South Carolina.
We have to go to a break, but Kenny in Charlotte, ask your question and we'll get the answer after the break. Kenny, go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Governor, how are you today?
Hey, how are you doing today?
Ask your question. You have 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, real quickly, Brad stole a little bit of my thunder, so in lieu of asking you a question on the economy, interested in what your plans are as we head into long session. And what goals do you have, and what would you like to see be accomplished next year?
Okay.
Very quickly.
No, don't do it now. Oh. We'll do it after the break.
Great question.
We have to take the break.
Well,
thank you for your question, Kenny. We're coming right back with Governor Pat McCrory at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Asbury Restaurant, offering their new seasonal menu featuring ember-roasted pumpkin and the flavors of fall. Located in Uptown Charlotte at the historic Dunhill Hotel, theasbury.com. And the British International School of Charlotte, empowering individual achievement for students age 2 through high school, hosting an admissions open house Tuesday, November 11th. Details at britishschoolofcharlotte.org. It's Friday. That means the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show. And in the first hour, the national hour, a panel of journalists joins Diane to talk about the top national stories of the week, which would, of course, include the GOP laying out priorities for a new Congress, President Obama meeting with leaders from both parties about future cooperation, and what's behind the four-year low in gas prices. Those stories and more coming up in 20 minutes. If you'd like to join our conversation, Facebook, Twitter, or email, charlottetalks@wfae.org. We'll get you to us. We're coming right back.
Are you a member of WFAE? Do you have a friend who listens and is not a member? Encourage them to join you and the 14,000 other listeners who not only use the station, but help pay for it with an individual contribution. Our members are the best advocates and the best promoters of WFAE. Won't you join them today at WFAE.org? Thank you.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Governor Pat McCrory is with us answering your questions on Facebook, Twitter, email at charlottetalks@wfae.org and on the phone. Although we have no open phone lines, I'll give you the number 704-926-WFAE. Now, getting back to the question that was asked by a listener just prior to the break.
About what our next agenda is going to be right for the long session in January. We've got to deal with Medicaid reform. To lower our cost and improve the quality of service to Medicaid recipients in North Carolina. But if we continue to have the cost overruns, we're not going to have money for education or roads or anything else. And I've got the House to vote for it under Tom Tillis's leadership. I did not get the Senate to vote for it. And I've got to get the Senate's support in January in working with the hospitals and working with the doctors and working with the insurance companies and working with our citizens to get Medicaid reform for North Carolina. The second area is energy exploration. We want to try to do some trial wells and begin some seismic testing. And the third is education. I did not get all of what I wanted to help teachers. I got a lot of what we wanted, but I did not get the promotional opportunities for teachers, a career pathways for teachers. So teachers get promoted within the teaching profession as opposed to having to become a principal or assistant administrator to get a promotion. I think there ought to be different levels of teaching, and there ought to be lead teachers who get a chance to make more money, and I want to push for that.
Well, let's talk about Medicaid for a second. You say that you came into office facing a Medicaid cost overrun of more than $500 million.
Yeah, a misforecast of $530 million.
And you now have a surplus. Wouldn't that surplus be higher if the state had decided to accept the $4.9 million a day, the federal government was offering under the Affordable Care Act?
No, because you're talking about two different pots of money and two different constituents. The constituents that we're serving right now are those constituents who are currently eligible for Medicaid. The question you're raising is, should we expand the current qualifications for Medicaid, which would expand the number of people who qualify for getting Medicaid? And that's what those dollars would go for at this point in time.
So how did you achieve the surplus?
It wasn't a surplus. There is a surplus because we now have a more accurate forecast, and we got to reduce the spending more in Medicaid. And do I think Aldona Voss, who sadly the Charlotte Observer and Fannie Flono asked for her resignation and said she was overpaid at a dollar a year. She's done an outstanding job, and she's also done a great job this past 3 weeks on the Ebola situations that we continue to have in North Carolina.
So before we started this program today, we had a couple of questions on this issue come up from listeners. Doug from our website asks, is the North Carolina State Legislature really proud of denying 500,000 people health insurance by not accepting the federal expanded program, is not accepting the federally funded program because in 3 years the state may have to pay 10% of the costs, looking out for the interests of North Carolina citizens or looking out for campaign contributing special interests?
That's a loaded question.
Yes, and Tammy on Facebook says, with a good deal of research pointing to the Affordable Care Act and its effects in states that took the Medicaid expansion, how can you continue to say no?
Well, first of all, I have not closed the door, and the reason I
Emily writes, why does he say he never closed the door on Medicaid expansion when he actually signed the bill last year that did exactly that?
That's not true. We did not sign any legislation that closed the door on Medicaid expansion. It's going to require the approval of the legislature. But the fact of the matter is, when I came into office, I had to fix the Medicaid system, broken system that we had today, including the $500 million miss. I don't think we should expand something before you fix what you have. And the current people who qualified for Medicaid were not getting the service they deserved, and the taxpayers were having a disservice by misspending in that area. I have spent a considerable amount of time, along with Secretary Voss and her team, to fix the current situation that we have. Now that it's getting better, by the way, there are still some major broken parts of it, major issues that we still have to deal with the existing Medicaid system. But in a parallel track, I'm talking with the states of Indiana and the states of Pennsylvania and the states of Utah and with other governors and finding out, is there a North Carolina system that we can have, which includes some expansion that the Obama administration would approve of. I don't want to implement a Washington Medicaid expansion program in North Carolina.
Republicans have just taken control of the Congress, and one of the things they're already talking about is repealing the Affordable Care Act. So are you wasting your time preparing for that?
No, I've got to go on a parallel track regardless of who's in office. And what I've got to look for, this election might give – the state of North Carolina and the state of Indiana more flexibility for the Obama administration, President Obama and his team, to give states more flexibility on how to implement a North Carolina plan as opposed to a Washington plan, which they think fits all the states equally, which it does not. North Carolina has its own unique problems, even within the state, from the east to the Piedmont to the west, that we need to adapt our own plan for North Carolina.
Okay.
And that's my goal.
We have had several questions over the past couple of months when you were not here about the turn of events with the film industry. We've decided that we really don't – evidently the legislature has decided that we don't want to give incentives to the film industry. David on our website says, I've had to start driving to Atlanta and Savannah, Georgia to work in the film industry. I currently live in Raleigh and would prefer to stay living here. Any possibility of renewing clean film industry jobs in North Carolina in 2015?
We do still have some incentives for the film industry, but it's not the same incentives that we have before, and in no way does it compete with Georgia. Georgia is basically paying the film industry to come to Georgia, and I can't afford to do that because that's money I've got to take away from someone else, whether it be roads or education, which you also want money for. This is not free money. But we do now have grants that are available for the film industry. And what I'm looking for the film industry, as I do manufacturing anything else, is long-term sustainable investment by that industry and others, which make a long-term commitment to North Carolina. And that's my goal.
Let me take a couple of phone calls very quickly. John in Indian Trail, welcome.
Good morning, Mike and Governor McCrory.
Morning.
Good morning.
I've noticed after you restructured the corporate tax rate, it seems a lot more companies are coming back to North Carolina. Would you think that the tax rate, the way we're doing it now, is that a better incentive than actually paying companies incentives like we did to Chiquita? I mean, do you see the difference between the incentives and the tax reform? And what do you think is bringing the companies back now?
I think our income tax reform, which now almost everyone's paying who's currently working a lower income tax on their paycheck, and a corporate tax has helped us tremendously, especially in our competition. Our major competition, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, the Sun Belt states are just – they're my competitors right now for major industry, from auto to finance to IT and we're now more competitive. And my goal is that the income tax and the corporate tax reductions, and we move some of the revenue, by the way, consumption tax. I've got to let you know, you're paying more for movie theater tickets right now because we lowered your income tax. Your paycheck, you're getting more money in your paycheck if you work in North Carolina than you were a year ago. But you're going to pay 50 cents more to go to a movie to help make up that revenue difference, to pay for our education, to pay for our roads, and to pay for our other needs in North Carolina.
And you're killing the film industry.
I'm killing the film. Yeah. They just need better films right now, to tell you the truth. And there's some good movies out right now, and I'm encouraging people. And by the way, we tax Panther tickets and Bobcat tickets and NC State and Carolina tickets now, where
theater
we didn't
tickets.
Do that before.
Right.
And so I said when I ran for office, and it caused controversy on both the right and the left, that I believe in not taxing productivity and moving that to more consumption. And I said that when I ran for office.
But isn't that regressive? Doesn't that hurt people on lower incomes more than the income tax?
It is more regressive.
Why is that a good thing?
Because people get a choice of what they want to do with their money versus a choice of how much the employer is going to take out of the paycheck. And I'd rather give the people a choice on do they want to spend their money on a movie ticket or a Panther game or anything else versus us not rewarding productivity.
Okay.
I want to reward productivity and reward work.
Let's take another question.
Let the people make that decision.
Let's take another question about the economy from Mark in Weddington. You're on WFAE, Mark.
I've just lost all the Panther fans.
Mike, first of all, I'd like to tell you that as Charlotte has been growing, I've been listening to people like you and Bob Lacey for years, and it's a good steady voice to hear you guys because y'all have been around for so long and done such a good job.
I had lunch with Bob Lacey yesterday, and I found out that Bob Lacey plays golf with the governor.
I kick his tail every time. We've been playing golf for 30 years.
And I just want to say, I've never been asked to play golf with the governor, so that's okay. Go ahead, Mark.
Bob's the one guy who'll out-debate me on the golf course. He's a comeback guy.
I would have loved to have followed them just to find the golf balls they lost. But I actually want to ask you a question about, I think our community college system is just does so much for so many people. Governor, how do you see our community college system moving forward in your plans?
It's a huge part of our plans and has been for the past year and a half. In fact, I just talked to Tony Zeis this morning at the Freedom Breakfast. And what we did different and something I'm very proud of in my administration – is one of the first pieces of legislation I changed was encouraging more vocational degrees out of high school and our community colleges, really going back to the 60s the way we used to do it and let people know that there is a career in vocational training or career tech training, because that's where we have a skill shortage right now in North Carolina. We have a major skill shortage in electricians, mechanics, IT, medical. And if we cannot fill that skills gap, we're in trouble in retaining and recruiting new businesses. So now I'm rewarding the community colleges that are giving the more expensive classes but have fewer graduates, auto mechanics, welding, electricians that deal with advanced manufacturing, where before I came into office, we were rewarding community college based upon the number of students they taught, not the number of students who are getting jobs. And right now, the jobs are in those areas that are more expensive to teach, mm-hmm. and we should not punish schools for teaching the more expensive courses that need more expensive instructors also. And Tony Zeis has been a great, great advocate of that, and I might also say Heath has been a great partner and advocate of helping me in that area,
Heath
too. Heath Morrison has been fantastic to work with, and he has a passion. He's had a great passion for teachers and students, and I hate to see that he's leaving.
Now, you brought him up unprovoked. I'm not sure.
That's because Heath did help.
Yes.
Heath helped a lot in my vocational training.
But we have this controversy going here where the school board has essentially accepted his resignation after having, I'm sure, prompted him for his resignation, and they're not being very forthcoming. You used to be the mayor of Charlotte. How forthcoming do they need to be about what happened, what the accusations were, what the facts on the ground are, what his compensation, his exit package is going to be? How transparent do they need to be, and how quickly do they need to be transparent?
As quickly as possible. And I also have to recognize they may have some state personnel laws which need to be changed to allow more transparency, but I think they need to get the information out. And I'm surprised. I thought Heath Morrison, even when we disagreed on certain issues, was a true professional, and I've never worked with a superintendent like him who fought so hard for the schools. And I saw that as government, and believe me, he came to the mansion many times with other superintendents who fought for their needs.
The allegations may be true, but the allegations may also be a part of a witch hunt. And we don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know any of the details. I just know the relationship that I had with him in both agreement and at times disagreement, it was very professional. And I'll tell you, he came up to Raleigh many times to fight on behalf of his students and his teachers.
Speaking of education, Jason emails, establishment of charter schools in North Carolina seems to be on the rise, which I believe is something your administration supported. But within the last 6 months, there have been several cases where charter schools have closed, causing a shift in students from those closing schools back to public schools. How does North Carolina protect charter school consumers, the students and the parents, to lessen the impact these schools close, these school closures will have on the students?
To demand high standards for the charter schools. And that's what I'm doing. And that's one reason some of the charter schools, who I'm a huge advocate for, because I like choice in education, but if they don't meet the demands, we're going to require they shut down. And I made that commitment as in supporting the charter school movement. I also can't let a few charter schools wreck a good idea of all the others that are doing tremendous work right here in Charlotte, including.
Dennis emails, economic analysis says the state will incur a $300 million revenue shortfall due to the new tax structure. Who will make up those dollars?
Right now, we don't know if there's going to be a shortfall. We probably won't know if we'll have a surplus or shortfall until the April, May, June time period. So we don't know that at this point in time, if there will be a shortfall or not. I never know. We base our future revenue based upon assumptions,
right,
and we hope our assumptions are correct. Tom, and if they're not, I've got a very tough job ahead of me.
Tom emails, considering the closeness of the statewide elections compared to the local races with many uncontested races, wouldn't the voters be better served with a neutral method of redistricting? Would you support or initiate such a move?
I've always thought we should have competitive districts in every race, and in both congressional and local races. How you do that, I don't know how, because even in setting up a commission, a neutral commission, the people setting up the commission are politicians, and they're going to ensure that the commission is set up to their advantage, and both the Democrats and Republicans are at fault. And I think the gerrymandered districts where we have no competition in the general election makes all of our jobs difficult, especially the executive branch, because I have to represent the whole state, where legislators, both Republican and Democrat, tend to now represent a more monolithic population.
I would talk – well, I'll throw this question out. We only have 20 seconds. John, Pat McCrory keeps saying that the new voting laws worked this election, but the fact is no one needed an ID for this past election. Witness Patrick Cannon.
I think that's another perfect reason why we need stronger laws. But we're giving people 2 more years to get their voter ID. You can get it free at the DMV. And I hope when you go to the DMV, you'll notice much better customer service since we've come into office.
Governor Pat McCrory, thank you for the hour.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. I'll tell Bob Lacey.